It's February 20th at 3:05 p.m. With us are Representative Gatto, Representative Newman, Representative Book, and myself, Chair Olson. First item on today's agenda is HJR 32, Broadcasting Industry, carried by the sponsor, Representative Bill Stoltz. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Olson and members of the committee. My name is Bill Stoltz. I represent the communities within House District 16, Chugiak and the Mat-Su. The measure before you is a resolution, a strongly worded letter to the powers that be in D.C. Supporting robust, open, free competition on our radio airwaves. There's continuing efforts to restrict efforts through what's mislabeled as the Fairness Doctrine. Prior to its lifting in 1987, we didn't have the robust, unfiltered, public accessible airwaves we had. And I would certainly, even though I don't always agree, and I've been called a lot of things on those robust free airwaves, from a Palin bot to a liberal, bleeding heart, ultra conservative. You know, it's people get to
tell us everything.
Just about everything. And
well, if that's all they've called you, you consider yourself lucky, I think.
That's
a number of us in the room have probably been called worse.
I won't tell you anything, but it's...
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Gardner, who's late for the first time this year, I believe.
It's young.
Please continue.
You know, I think we all, I've heard many of you on those forums participating, and it's great to have such an unfiltered public forum, and without the free competition, unrestricted competition we have in the airwaves, that will be a voice and an avenue that's lost, and we'll be stuck to mostly out-of-state owned media outlets, whether even the ones in our small communities. I think the newspaper in both of our communities, Chair Olson, is headquartered out of Augusta, Georgia. I mean, fine publications, but they're not ours. Even the airwaves that are headquartered outside, they're available to regular Alaskans. You don't even have to make any sense to talk on them, and I think I've been an example of that at times.
Yeah, actually, we're blessed with seven local stations on the peninsula, at least seven. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions. Representative Stoltz, what brought this to your attention?
Thank you to the Chair, Representative Newman. It's been a continual effort by there's been legislation introduced in the past, and there's legislation in the current House of Representatives that would lift the remove the or reinstate, excuse me, you get into this double, it would reinstate the so-called Fairness Doctrine, and that would basically be the death knell of open, unfiltered talk radio as we know it today.
What is the Fairness Doctrine?
Well, it's Chairman Olson, Representative Newman, it's if you put one sentiment on there, you have to provide an equal time for a competing idea through a structure, and it's that's why we used to have boring talk radio interviewing the guy that tell us about the new plan for the sewer system development and the LIDs. You know, those of you that heard it on before almost 20 years ago or over 20 years ago, that's the type of stuff you heard.
Really?
Followed?
Keep going on here. So this kind of just sends a message to help support our federal delegation in fighting this? Yeah. Or is this what's
you know,
the deal
here? Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, you know, I guess I'm not that arrogant to think they need help, but as they're a pretty effective delegation, but they are outnumbered at this time, but I guess sometimes that means they've got them surrounded. I know what their sentiments are, and it's a courtesy we send them, and I guess Senator Murkowski says they sometimes read them, so as she facetiously remarked, I know they do read them, and I think, and Senator Stevens has been a scion of the Commerce Committee, and I know he supports us on this, and I wanted to add our voices to support him into keeping open, unfiltered airwaves for all ideas to all ideas to enter the marketplace.
And one more, Representative Stoltz, does this affect public radio at all?
Gosh, Mr. Chairman, I don't know how public radio is. I don't know if I've heard anything conservative on a public radio, and frankly, I guess there's a market. I don't know if they're necessarily in the marketplace. They are. I wish by the time this gets to the floor, I'll know that for sure, but I guess if that's what we will have as your idea, that will probably be the only unconventional ideas and viewpoints that will probably be on public radio if the so-called fairness doctrine is implemented.
Would it inhibit them in any way?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe it would, and I'm not familiar with their charter and what their...
Thanks, Representative Stoltz. It's a good bill. I like it. Thank you.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Ledoux, and Representative Gatto has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Stoltz, my congratulations on page 2. Copies of the resolution will be sent to the Alaska delegation. Total of 3 people, and not the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds that typically these resolutions go to. I did have a second question. A friend of mine, his name is Jeff Kropp, and he has a radio station in Oregon. He was the host, and he was also a member of the Oregon legislature. And he told me he was quitting because, as a person who operated the radio station, he had to give equal time, because he was a legislator, to his opponent. And he said, rather than do that, I will just leave the legislature and continue to be just a talk show host. So in your thoughts, does it apply when you're a talk show host and a legislator to deserve equal time for your opponent?
Mr. Chairman Olson, Representative Gatto, I believe there are, for the purposes of the candidates, there are some loosely supported equal time provisions, but what apparently Representative Kropp was presented with as a dilemma is the same one that that commercial broadcasts are presented with. If we are going to air a commercially viable radio talk show host, a Bill O'Reilly or the folks that we have in the Anchorage market, then you have to open up an equal amount of time for a competing idea, which may not be marketplace viable. And what they'll do is they'll probably just run canned music and more country, I guess.
Representative Book.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative Stoltz. So, in essence, you're asking us to support a resolution that condemns an act. Is that correct? The proposed bill?
Mr. Chairman, or Representative Book, that strongly discourages passage of the act. Yes? Okay. Condemnation is often for higher powers than me.
I'm looking at some, now the information in this packet, was this forthcoming from your staff? All of this came from your staff?
Yes.
Was this
yes,
it was. Okay. I'm looking at page 2 of 3. It's listed, I don't know, it's on the CNS. news.com, and on page 2 it states that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 1969 that the doctrine did not violate the First Amendment because the airwaves belong to the public. So what is being proposed now has gone through the U.S. Supreme Court and has been vetted as found to support the First Amendment. So you're asking us to oppose that?
Mr. Chairman, what Representative Buick, what the Supreme Court said, it was legal to invoke that under their interpretation that the so-called fairness doctrine, but didn't mandate it. Then it becomes a legislative administrative decision, and it was an administrative decision, I believe, in 1987. The courts, in their wisdom, have said having a fairness doctrine doesn't violate the First Amendment in their provision, but it clearly violates every sensible principle of the free marketplace of ideas.
Continuing on further, MSNBC.com, page 1 of 2, middle of the page, it says, this is information that was provided by your staff that supposedly is valid, pertinent, and germane.
Yep.
According to researchers, more than 85% of talk radio programming leans to the right. So, seems like this is, if in fact that's the case, it would seem as though there is some one-sided versions of the truth going out there now by 85%. So, I mean, how do we discount, you know, your information in here about the U.S. Supreme Court, the information in here about, you know, talk radio right now, and, I mean, I'm having a hard time supporting this, sir, that, you know, you're saying that we don't have free and open, and that the fairness doctrine that is being proposed is not recommended by the Supreme Court. And, I just find these conflicts of information in here that I'm having a difficult time resolving.
And thank you, Chairman Olson, Representative Buick. I think I wouldn't have to search very hard to find a quote about what the interpretation of the slant of the three network stations are, and I guess McNeil Layer and Washington. There's perceived slants. It would probably be in the same percentile, but. My concern is if it is predominantly of that, we didn't filter all this, much like talk radio. We just provided as much information so that everybody could look at it, and I didn't filter out the stuff that I thought might criticize my case a little bit, because I wanted you to hear all the comments. But If there were to be that slant, and I'm not sure if it is, it's yielded by what the people want to listen to. You can't make people listen to NPR or David Brancaccio now in his slant on what Development Alaska is doing. I mean, this has inimical effects on the. I mean, that's a continuing debate, has a subjectivity to it. But my thrust is that I want the marketplace and what people are willing to listen to, vote with their dials or their push buttons, and what advertisers are willing to support because people are listening to it.
But one could probably make a valid argument that if it is indeed 85%, that it hasn't been very effective in the last few election cycles. Representative Ledoux.
Understand correctly that this fairness doctrine that they're now talking about reinstituting actually hasn't been in effect since 1987?
Chairman Olson, that's correct.
So, just hypothetically, if we were to reinstitute it now, What effect would this have on Anchorage talk radio? Would that mean that, what's the IBEW station in Anchorage? I can't
remember. Kudo.
Kudo. Would that mean that Kudo would have to give Eddie Burke or Dan Fagan time? I mean, how did, I don't really understand how it works.
They've got a radio station called Kudo talk radio.
And Chairman Olson, Representative Ledoux, that's the principle. Anybody can demand equal time and present that there was a controversial story with a political slant, and they would have to provide equal time. And that's frankly, it's just something. It just won't happen. The format will disappear.
Paul?
And would the equal time have to be for free?
Mr. Chairman, it has to be made available. That's the premise of the fairness doctrine.
Well, does made available mean made available with a price tag, or made available with? I mean,
it's Chairman Olson. It's made available as a public service. It's and that's why you had different formats. That's why you had such bland, boring talk radio prior to, with a few notable exceptions, but it was by and large, you just didn't have that format because it was the lifting of the fairness doctrine by President Reagan's administration that it basically, much like a tax incentive, I guess, it just caused a blossom of, you removed a barrier an artificial barrier. It allowed the marketplace to work.
I can't quite remember back at before 1987, but was like Rush Limbaugh on? Were any of the current talk show hosts, were they?
Chairman Olson, Representative Ledoux, the format was developed for, I believe, the broadcast network that airs Mr. Limbaugh's program. Was created in reaction to this free marketplace opening, and it would not have been allowed to exist. I mean, it wasn't prohibited, but the barrier was the barrier of providing a competing time slot of unmarketable broadcast format just didn't work.
Representative Newman, followed by Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just listening to the question that's been going on here. Broadcasting companies are a for-profit business. What right does the state of Alaska or the U.S. government or any other government have a right to tell a for-profit business what they should have to do or not have to do with their time, per se, or airwave time, or what they do, or what programs they host, or what they don't host. This is a free enterprise system that's made the country a lot stronger today for what it is. And, you know, Representative Stoltz, can you comment on, you know, I'm carrying this, and I want to just form this into a question instead of just a statement, I guess. But, you know, open, free competition in a company that is a for-profit. I mean, I have no doubts in my mind. This is our broadcasting, our news media is a for-profit. And sometimes I maybe don't like what they write or the stances that they take. Or if I think that maybe 85% of the views that are or more viewed towards the left are left-leaning arguments, or I don't care. It's a for-profit business. Am I wrong in assuming that?
Well, Chairman Olson, that was pretty softball. That's the whole premise of me introducing this, and it's I believe what you've said. It's that it is, and I think if you look at I can look at our Alaskan stations. I think they are very responsible on public affairs. They present. I listen to talk radio quite a bit, and I've heard at least these three on the end all on talk radio, and I think I've heard Representative Gardner on talk radio, and And someday I'll hear you if I'm listening at the right time. But it's a, and I think they're fairly, I mean, they're open, accessible, and when there's a competing idea on, I think they, out of a sense of internal fairness, and they want to keep their listeners, and they want to have a sense of balance just out of propriety. I think they internally do that.
Thank you.
Representative Gatto, followed by Representative Ledoux.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I've been just jotting a couple notes while we've had this conversation, and I thought, gee, shouldn't the universities, including Berkeley and Stanford, have a fair exchange of left-wing students and right-wing students? And the professors at the university, should they be divided half conservative, half liberal? Should the Hollywood actors be half conservative, half liberal? Should the films produced be half conservative, half liberal? How about the TV actors, the TV anchors, the newspapers? And I don't want to leave out the courts and art exhibits. If we're going to control society, well, let's do it all or not do any of it.
Is there a question in there or is a statement?
Yes, is the answer. No. I'm just kidding.
Let the record reflect we've been joined by Representative Ramirez, and Representative Ledoux has a question for a statement.
Well, I actually don't think this bill or this resolution causes me too much heartburn, but in your response to Representative Newman's question about free enterprise and the broadcasting industry, I guess, would you accept that?
Sorry. Would you accept that there are any regulations that are appropriate with respect to broadcasting? I mean, that are maybe don't quite gel with the concept of a free enterprise? Like, for example, I don't think that we allow, at least during certain times of day when children are awake, for broadcasters to, you know, broadcast pornographic stuff.
And thank you, Chairman Olson, Representative Ledoux. I think there are regulations. That's not what this resolution is biting off. This is biting off the access, and I think that's probably a reason why some of the popular hosts have gone talk radio format, have gone to other, I think, satellite. I can't afford it. I've never listened to it myself, but I think that whole genre of non-family has gone to there because the regulatory agencies have for content on the I guess the decency standards. That's not what my resolution is addressing. My resolution is addressing the open and free access of the opportunity to air your message without
follow up.
I understand that, but when when Representative Newman asked the question, it looked like we were getting off on the subject of whether or not there should be any regulations with respect to broadcasting whatsoever, and I just wanted to clarify.
Sure, and Chairman, Chairman Olson, there is very stringent regulation. I think he was making some broad philosophical things, which in a perfect world, I guess. Which we don't live. And hello to you too, sir.
Well, there's nobody signed up at the LIOs. Is there anybody in the committee room that would care to testify on this bill? And if we can't find anybody in the room, is Representative Gatto or Guerra outside the door? Would you like to testify on this resolution?
The resolution, no.
Okay, well, I know it wasn't going to the Finance Committee, so I thought I'd give you a shot at it.
I thought maybe I would leave you guys the equal time thing.
Seeing nobody that wishes to testify on it, I think I'll close out public testimony and bring it back to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
I move House Joint Resolution
30. Correct.
H2/E from committee with any attached fiscal notes or recommendations?
For purposes of a vote or purposes of discussion?
Purposes of vote.
Call the roll, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Representative Ladue?
Yes.
Representative Grimes?
Yes.
Representative Cloute?
No.
Representative Gardner?
Yes.
Chairman Olson?
Yes.
Six yeas, one nay.
With that, we'll move the resolution onto the floor. Thank you very much. Representative Stoltz, and we're going to take a brief at ease while we sign the transmittal. 33. The next bill will be, it looks like a bill that we've seen before, but House Bill 331. You'll be doing the honors, Crystal?
Yes, sir.
And Representative Geary, you want to join her at the table, or are you going to do seconds?
I will be here.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Crystal Kieneman, staff to Representative Roses. Before us, we have House Bill 331, which deals with motor vehicle insurance, license suspension, and impoundment of vehicles for certain offenses. Currently, right now, there's a loophole in the law. If someone is involved in a motor vehicle accident and they have insurance and show the police officer that they have their insurance card, but fail to fill out a form, they can be charged with a crime and their license can be suspended. What we're trying to do is...
Oh, I remember this.
This is not a new issue. It was voted on the floor, passed over to the Senate. So this is a refresher course for all of you. If you don't fill out the form, DMV sends you a form, but they send it to the address that they have on file. If it's not your current address, you don't receive that form, your license then in turn is suspended. So what we're trying to do is say that if when you fill out the police report, the address you list on the police report is your most current address, and then that gives DMV the option to then send it to both addresses to help notify you. This bill also states that if you change your name or address within 30 days, you must notify DMV, Department of Public Safety, or the Department of Administration. And if you fail to do so, it adds a fine not to exceed $300. Also, if you drive without insurance, your vehicle may be impounded, which is current law right now. We're adding to that a Class B misdemeanor with a fine of at least $500. And that's for certain crimes, such as driving under the influence. You know, if you're arrested for driving under the influence, failing to submit to a breathalyzer or a chemical test. That, in essence, is House Bill 331.
That's a nice title.
Could be narrowed.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My next door neighbor who procrastinates a lot. You know, I was just kind of reading the sponsor statement, and I looked at this bill, and it seems like there's like three things we're trying to do here.
Mm-hmm.
A bill authorized increased penalties for uninsured motorists, maximum fine of $500. It could be $5,000 minimum, as far as I'm concerned, on that issue. I mean, if you're driving without insurance, you should have to have insurance. That's what the law says.
Absolutely.
Flat out. Mm-hmm. But I just get... I'm telling you, I'm very uncomfortable with a $300 fine that if Department of Public Safety, Department of Motor Vehicles, I'm assuming, sends you a notice that, and you don't send it back, you get a $300 fine, or I guess worse. But and when it says here, it closes a loophole that the law has caused a number of drivers to be charged criminally for driving without auto insurance. My first question to you is going to be is, how often does that happen? Because I think if you went to a judge and said, hey, you know, I had a driver's license here. And I'll just, while you're doing that one, I'll come up with my next five or ten questions.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, there is a provision in this bill that states it is a reasonable defense if you do have, if you do have insurance and you go to court, you can say, look, at the time of the accident, you know, I did have insurance, everything's fine. So you won't be charged with the crime for that.
Follow-up?
Yes, several. Thank you. And I guess that's still a person has to go to the court, and you have to go through a lot of expenses, where if you show, it would be my assumption, if you show proof of insurance at a motor vehicle accidents, you've shown them, and if they could prove different that you didn't, obviously someone's going to make a claim on the insurance company one way or another. And if you don't have insurance, that's going to be found out if you've got some type of paperwork. And then start put all the criminal penalties on them you want. But I think that we've got an issue where oftentimes I do this personally. I know. I don't have my license in my pocket. I didn't put the proof of insurance card in the car that my wife said, put this in the car, and I put it on the windowsill to get right on it, baby. And I don't. And then even if I do have it and I get in an accident, I still have to send in paperwork to DMV or I'm going to get a fine. Even though I got insurance.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, that's DMV's way of verifying that you do have insurance. Because even if you're at a scene of an accident and you present your insurance card to the police officer and he notes, yes, you do in fact have insurance, your policy could have lapsed. And there's no way for them to know without going, sending in the paperwork to DMV and saying, and them verifying that, yes, in fact, your policy still is intact.
Couple of follows.
And so, Crystal, have you looked at ways to where, when you go in to get your insurance, that DMV would require proof of insurance upon issuance of a driver's license?
Currently.
Or a renewal of a license, or a change of registration on a vehicle, or the many other things that we do at DMV that have to do with having to have their driver's license drive that vehicle. And, is that incorporated into this bill or different from this bill? Or
Through the chair, Representative Newman, currently DMV does do that. They do make sure when you go and get your driver's license and renewals that you do have current up-to-date insurance. But in the time of when your driver's license is issued to you and the time where you have to go in and renew it, during that time your policy could lapse. And there's no way for them to know.
Thank you for now, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Newman had a question that I think was about Section 1, and I just want to make sure I understand what Section 1 does. Currently, under statute, if you have a driver's license or a vehicle registration, and you live at a certain address, and that's what the record of the DMV has. The statute says when you move, you have to tell the DMV within 30 days that you've moved. What Section 1 does is say if you fail to notify the DMV, you can be fined not to exceed $300. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, that is correct.
Mr. Chair, when the time comes, I'll have an amendment.
Representative Ledoux, followed by Representative Gatto.
I'm really totally confused by this. Section 2, where it says that it's an affirmative defense that you had insurance to prosecuting you for not having insurance, you're telling me right now, under the current law, that there's no way out of this?
if they say you don't have insurance, then you're stopped from saying?
Representative Guerra.
Yeah, let me just answer that and a couple of the other questions. This bill sort of corrects some very frustrating parts of the law. The part, Representative Ledoux, you mentioned, right now, if you drive without insurance, it's a crime. It should be. If you actually had insurance, a valid insurance policy, there are ways you can be charged with driving without insurance. And the only way you prove that, the only way you get out of the crime is by showing up at court, pushing the case to trial, and then at that point the DAs will drop the case. But the whole time you've had this criminal charge hanging over your head. So what we're saying in Section 2 is we want to relieve the person the burden of knowing they have this criminal charge over their head. If they can show they had insurance, valid insurance, at the time that they were stopped, they know that this charge is not going to be valid. They show they give the proof to the troopers. They give the proof to the state. The charge gets dropped. But during the whole time that charge was pending over their head, they know the case isn't going anywhere anyway. What happens right now is the only circumstance this happens, and it's happened a number of times, frankly, to staffers. That's how we found out about it, is that you're driving around. You get into a car accident. You get pulled over. You show your proof of insurance to the trooper. The trooper then gives you a form, if they remember, that says, please send in better proof of your insurance. You forget to send that in. They send you a notice saying you forgot to send the form in, even though we saw your proof of insurance at the scene of the accident. That didn't count. They send you a form reminding you to send the proof of insurance in, but they send it to your old address because DMV is required to send that notice to the address they have on file, not the address you gave at the scene of the accident, which is the better address. They send it to the wrong address. You don't receive the notice. You are now driving without insurance. They suspend. You're driving without a license. They suspend your driver's license at that point. You then get pulled over again. You've been driving without a license. It's a crime. You should rationally be able to say, the reason my license was suspended was I didn't have insurance, but I really did. You're the guys who thought we didn't have insurance. So this provision says it's a defense that if you had insurance at the time, you don't have to worry about that criminal charge. Right now, people have to worry about the criminal charge because it actually is a crime. And you have to rely on the good faith of the prosecutor to ultimately drop the charge. The first part, which says if you have your wrong address on the DMV files, you can be fined for $300. Right now, it's a crime. You want to take out the fine, that's fine. I think it's a little silly myself. It's excessive. A lot of people have the wrong address on the DMV files. The former director of DMV wanted that in there because he said, now it's a crime. If you want to change the law, at least give us some sort of threat to people so they have to give us their right address. I don't necessarily buy that, but that's Section 1.
Can I
follow up?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure that Section 2 does what you want it to, because Section 2 still says that it's an affirmative defense.
Mm-hmm.
So by saying that it's an affirmative defense, to me that means you're going to have to go into court to show that you've got insurance. So I'm not quite sure what it accomplishes.
Through the chair, right now it's not a defense. Right now, it doesn't matter whether you had insurance. You were driving without a license, and that's a crime. DMV says you were driving without a license because when you got pulled over, you never sent in the form that they reminded you about, so you were driving without a license. That's a crime, even though you had the insurance.
So they wouldn't.
And what this says is you know you have a valid legal defense if you can show you had insurance at the time. So
it's
I get the criminal charge.
Affirmative defense to a prosecutor, a person's license.
It's an affirmative valid defense.
I don't know. I've seen complicated statutory language before, but this seems, I just can't understand D.
DMV knows about the loophole. They've asked for this clarification. We passed it on the House floor last year. It is complex, but the current law is even more complex. The current law says you have no defense. We're trying to say you do have a defense.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Driving without proof of insurance is 6 points. That's a whole lot of points. And when you're, what's the maximum? 12?
Six.
So if you've already got a 2-point violation, you've now exceeded the limit. And you can go to court.
Yeah, the first one's six, correct? 12?
Is it 12 maximum? We need a teenager here.
I don't have any points.
She's the closest.
through the chair, Representative Gatto, I will find out how many points it takes. But
six is more than halfway there.
Right.
And the trouble is, you have insurance. Mm-hmm. Your card that you had in the car was for the first 6 months. And when you renewed it for the second 6 months, you didn't pull the card out. You show them the first 6 months, no good. You show them the second 6 months, I'm not sure that's good either, because anybody could have canceled it. But the trouble is, who gets to forgive you? And I believe the police officer who gave you the six-point summons has to be the one. And where I've seen this occur is there was a traffic accident, the insurance card wasn't in the car, so you go to court, the police officer's there, you show the judge the insurance, he says you had insurance, the police officer then gives you a forgiveness. And I don't know how he does it, but he gives you a forgiveness. And is it called repeals or something? Reverses or something? The ticket. Yeah. So it does complicate things enormously for a driver who was legitimately insured. I know there's all kinds of rats out there that could care less. But there are all kinds of people who do their best, just try to go to work, and I hate to see them take such a beating over failure to put the card in the car, because my wife depends on me to do it, and if I don't do it, she's the one that's going to get in trouble.
Representative Gardner, followed by Representative Ledoux. No, Newman.
Mr. Chair, it seems to me that there are two very silly things we have in the law right now that bring this bill or come to a head in this particular bill. One is, as Representative Newman said, we absolutely want people to have insurance when they drive, and we can throw the book at them if they don't. But to give them 6 points for not having a current insurance card in their car seems to me really outrageous. And then similarly, under current statute, and this is the thing this bill is trying to really get to. If you're pulled over, you have an accident, you show them your insurance card, you're one of the lucky ones that actually has it in your card, the police officer gets your current license, and then the second proof of insurance that you're required to do has to go to your old address that you've just told the officer is no longer a valid address. Yep. And then you lose your license because the DMV is required to send to a knowingly an invalid address. So that's easily fixed, to allow the DMV to use whatever license whatever address you say, this is my good license. I mean, my good address. And just let them do that.
Why don't we cut to the chase? Whitney Brewster, are you online? Whitney?
Brewster, I'm the director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. Just to address some of the questions that have come up, a driver is allowed 12 points in a year before suspension and 18 points within 24 months. The points are only put on someone's record upon conviction. If the individual goes to court, the judge does have the ability to dismiss that citation at that time. The Division of Motor Vehicles is in support of having the flexibility to send either the notice to either the address on record or what's on the report of the accident, because we are aware that we do receive some of these notices back undeliverable. We estimate, we don't keep these numbers, but we estimate that we receive about 10% of them back. And we really do want to be able to notify these people of the requirements. I am available to answer any questions that the committee may have. Also with me is Carrie Hennings, who is in charge of driver's licensing. If there is a question that I am unable to answer, she is available as well.
Thank you, Whitney. I think Representative Ledoux has several questions for you.
No, it's not really that I've got a question. I'm reading D, and maybe it's because it's late in the day, but I read D and I can't understand what D is saying. I mean, I understand it when it's explained to me,
But it seems like it's really convoluted.
Mr. Chair, the law is convoluted right now. Representative Ledoux, D says that it's an affirmative defense. That means the charge disappears.
I know.
It's an affirmative defense.
No. Excuse me.
You have to prove it.
But when it's an affirmative defense, the person who is doing the defending has the burden of proof to show it. So that means that person has to go into court. I mean, theoretically, yes, that is what it means. They would have to go into court to defend themselves, presenting that as an affirmative defense.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, let me explain to you why that's not a burden. You get pulled over under current law. You didn't send in the form that showed you had insurance 6 months ago during your first car accident, and they've suspended your license. You had insurance at the time, but they never sent the form to your right address. So now you get arrested for driving without a license. You're told that you're arrested for driving without a license because you didn't have insurance when you know you did. You have no recourse other than the hope that the district attorney doesn't pursue the charge. You have no affirmative defense. So you're sitting there stressing out over the next 90 days that they might pursue this criminal charge. They tend to drop the charge. I don't know that they've ever actually...
That was what I was going to say. Do you know of a single instance where they've ever pursued...
No. But I also know of many instances where people have criminal charges hanging over their heads until the day of trial, and it's a very stressful thing. So what this says... So you can get arrested, you spend time in jail, and they resolve the case on the day of trial.
Do you know of a single case where somebody has actually spent time in jail over this and has really had insurance?
I know of cases where people have been arrested. They post bail and they get out of jail because this is a minor criminal charge, and so it's easy to post the bail.
And, again, couldn't that still happen? I mean, they'd get arrested, and then they'd, have to go into court to show that they had this affirmative defense. I mean, how is this? I mean, I see where making the department send to the actual address. That makes eminent sense.
The point you make, you probably could take out the word affirmative and say it's a defense because that's easier to prove. But the thing that this bill does that's different than the current law is that when you get charged with this crime, you don't really... The moment you know you had insurance at the time they said you were driving without a license, when they said you didn't have insurance but you know you did, you know that's going to be easy to prove. You don't have to worry that you're really going to lose this criminal case in court. It is possible that they could arrest you incorrectly in the meantime, that's true. But over the next 60, 90 days as you're waiting for trial, you know you've got the goods. You know you've got the defense. You don't have to worry about going to jail. You don't have to worry about being convicted of something you didn't do. That's the point. Now, if you want to delete the word affirmative because you think it's easier to prove without the word affirmative, that's fine. But you have to put something in the law that says it is completely legal for you to drive with insurance even if DMV doesn't think you had it, if you can show you had it. You have to have something in the law that says that, or else you'll continue to have people getting arrested for driving when they really did have a license, when they really did have insurance. So if you have a better way to write it, I really invite you to do it. This is the best way we've come up with. And it makes sense.
And these people aren't, under the way the law currently works, just able to call the prosecutor's office and show that they've got proof of insurance? And
right. No, we've had two cases come to our office where the person had the proof of insurance, proved that they had insurance at the time that DMV said they didn't have insurance, and the response was, show it to us in court. And the case was ultimately dropped when the trial time came. But that's what happens with a busy DA's office. They just deal with the cases on the day of trial, a trial call.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I have a question for Director Brewster. And are you still online?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Is it accurate? I mean, is it true that you can get 6 points on your driver's license for the offense of not having evidence of insurance in your car, or is it for the offense of not having insurance?
Through the Chair, Representative Gardner, if they show proof at the time they go to court, it is dismissed. It is a 6-point ticket. Does that answer your question?
And follow up. So if I have automobile insurance and I'm pulled over for whatever reason, and I don't have the card in my car because the one that's in my car is the one that expired last week, but I do have insurance, I can get 6 points on my license for not having that card in my car.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, that person would be cited for failing to have insurance, but it would not go on that person's record until conviction at the time they go to court.
Okay, so just to be absolutely certain, I understand. The citation would be for failure to have insurance, not a citation for failure to have proof of insurance in my car.
Representative Gardner, it would be proof of insurance.
So I could get a 6-point ticket for failure to have proof of insurance in my car.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, that is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Gura.
Through the chair, that's certainly also a conundrum in the law that Representative Gardner and Ms. Brewster just talked about. It's not addressed by this bill. That's a whole separate issue, which is, do you have to carry the proof, and how hard is it to carry your updated proof? Certainly, what the DMV should do and the troopers should do in that case is say, you know, if you had better proof and you didn't have it on the day, it's a waivable 6 points. But that's not addressed by this bill. You might want to address it somehow, but it's not addressed here.
Ms. Brewster, is the division supportive of the bill in its current form this go around?
Mr. Chairman, the division is supportive of Section 4 that addresses the ability of the division to send notification to either the address on file or the address on the accident report. We don't have particularly strong feelings on the remainder of the sections.
So you're neutral on 1, 2, 3, and 5?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Guerra. You said that if the police officer at the scene of an accident happens to give you the paperwork to send in. Well, they don't. So you didn't send in your paperwork. Now you're a criminal. Or because you didn't send in your paperwork within 30 days.
Representative Newman, it's actually even more complex than that, but they ask you for your proof of insurance, you show it to them, they give you a form to send in, you forget.
Or if they don't give you
the
form.
Or if they don't give you a form. And sometimes we'll hear from the people that we didn't get the form, but we don't know if that's true or not. So then DMV will send you a new form, and then they send it to the wrong address. That's when you don't get it. So under current law, it's too late. You didn't send in the form. They suspend your license. You can't do anything about it. And now you're driving without a license, even though you really did have insurance. So it's not fixable right now. You're reliant on the goodwill of the district attorney to drop the charge. That's why Section 2 and Section 4 are important. Just to address your prior question on mandatory insurance, we're not doing anything to make insurance mandatory here. It already is. The thing in Section 3 that we do is right now driving without insurance. This is if you really don't have insurance, if you're driving without insurance. Right now it's a Class B misdemeanor, just like we say in Section 3. So we affirm that it's a Class B misdemeanor, but right now a Class B misdemeanor is punishable by a fine of as little as $0. And what we're saying is if you're driving without insurance, there should be at least some minimum fine. I mean, otherwise it's cheaper to drive without insurance than it is to get it. So all we change in Section 3 is we say if you drive without insurance, there's at least a $500 fine. It's already a Class B misdemeanor. We don't change that part. That's certainly, you know, the will of the committee, but it seems to me there should be some minimum fine for driving without insurance.
A couple follow-ups. Well, I like Section 3. Section 1 kind of gives me some heartburn.
Two.
I just wish I had a better understanding understanding of this. It seems like we're like there's two or three things we're trying to do with one bill here, and it seems to muddy it up a little bit. And I like parts of it, and there's parts that I just having a tough time with that I, you know, I want to support the bill, but thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner, followed by Representative Liddell.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I sort of agree with a little bit of what everybody's saying here, and I think that as a state, what we want is to have laws that people can understand and that the average well-intentioned person operating in good faith can achieve without undue hardship. And so we occasionally come across these things that are just sort of silly or don't make sense. And I would submit that Section 1 is one of those things. And I'd like to offer an amendment that deletes Section 1. We have on the books the requirement that if you move, you need to notify the DMV if you have a driver's license or a vehicle registered. Now, you know, kind of makes sense, I suppose. But to be subject to a $300 fine for failing to tell the DMV you have a new address is, to me, egregious. And I would suggest that very, very few Alaskans who consider themselves law-abiding people actually know about that or do it. And it may be that the fine could be waived in practice. I don't know if it's ever, you know, anybody would ever actually impose it, but why should we have it on the books if it doesn't make sense to us? So
we'll take amendments when we get done with public testimony.
Okay.
Hate to be picky, but Representative Ledoux.
I got a question from Ms. Brewster. I understand that right now the law requires that the notice be sent to the address on the license. Would DMV be aware from the accident report that there is another address? And if it is aware of the other address, why hasn't DMV, without us making a law saying that you need to do it? If DMV knows that there is a problem there, then wouldn't the sensible thing be for DMV to just send it to the address which they know is the actual, I mean, you could send it, of course, to the address that the law requires you to send it to, but why not also just send it to the address that you happen to know is the real address?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yes, to answer your first question, we can tell from an accident report if there is a different address. We are required to send it via certified mail, which is approximately $4. The law specifically states that it is to be sent to the address that is on record, and the Division of Motor Vehicles has been following that law. Being so new to my position, I've been on since January. I do not know why this issue hasn't been addressed before, but I'm very pleased that it's being addressed now.
Follow.
Maybe I missed it, but did you tell me why you can't without this statute? Why you can't and you haven't simply sent it to the address which you know is the correct address?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, we have been looking at the. I don't know that there is anything in law preventing us from sending it to the other address. But the law does specifically say that we are to send it to the address on record. We do get a number of accident reports, and it is extremely expensive to send via certified mail. I don't know if that is the reasoning behind why the Division of Motor Vehicles has chosen not to send to the address on the accident report. But I do imagine that is a likely reason because of the cost and because of the way that the law is written.
Understand. Thank you.
Representative Gardner, did you make a motion or were you thinking about making a motion?
I did make a motion, Mr.
Can you
Chair,
please withdraw it until we
withdraw my
close?
Motion.
Thanks. Representative Gatto, followed by Representative Newman.
Thank you,
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. I was just thinking, poor Joe homeowner is getting ready to move, and he says, well, let me see, I've got to tell the post office, I've got to transfer my Visa card, my MasterCard, my cell phone, the other cell phone, the landline, the gas, the electric.
Magazines.
Holy smokes. I mean, and I forgot to tell DMV. Here comes the fine. God, that's just astounding to me. So, Representative Gardner, I'll be supporting whatever.
You left off NRA membership.
That's right.
Representative Newman and then Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the first people I get to is my NRA membership. You know, I guess Representative Gere or Crystal, when we're looking at Section 1 on page 1, it says Alaska statute is amended by adding a new subsection to read, a person convicted of violation of A of this section is guilty. But we start with B. What's A?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, one second, I'll pull up statute. They threw the B clause in when you added the new one, which the old current statute says, with permission if I may read, a person who has applied for or been issued a certificate, registration, title, license, shall notify the appropriate department in writing of the change of name or address within 30 days. So that's then taking that section, making that section subsection A, and then would throw this as subsection B. So it would say, you know, subsection A would say, if you, you know, you shall notify the department within 30 days. B then would say, if you fail to notify the department within 30 days, you're subject to this penalty. Because currently, right now, there is no penalty for failing to notify the department. So you could be running around for years, you know, like me. I just changed, you know, got married in September, changed my name. And if I hadn't changed my name through the DMV, you know, even though my Social Security card and all my other documents had my new name on it, there'd be nothing for DMV to do with me running around with my old name. So I could, in essence, have two aliases.
Paula?
Thank you, and it's nice to see another glowing face in the room. On Section 5, it adds a new amendment. It's amended by adding a new section to read in it, and it adds this section, and it adds, there's reference to five other Alaska statutes. Could you kind of go through those a little bit? What's the gist of what's going on? You don't have to read them all, but I'm trying to get an understanding. It says, you know, persons in violation of these five different statutes, and your vehicle is going to be impounded. And it's a new section, but we don't know what those are.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, 2833030 deals with controlled substances. So if you're pulled over and the police officer says, I believe you're under the influence of a controlled substance, and they arrest you for that, that's one of the charges. 031 deals with failure to submit to a breathalyzer. 030 is DUI, and 032 is failure to submit to a chemical test. So they all deal with.
Those seem to be a lot of big issues in a little section that weren't listed.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Newman. It just occurs to me, on Section 1, right now, without that subsection B, violation of Part A, which is not giving them your right address, falls within the catch-all Class B misdemeanor of the DMV statutes. So if you don't say what the punishment is for not changing your address, it's a Class B misdemeanor. So that's why we put B in, which says, no, it's not a Class B misdemeanor, it's just a fine. You would have to, if you want, and I also think $300 is a harsh fine for not changing your address. You might just say a fine not to exceed $50, so it's not a crime, and not to exceed means it could be zero. But if you don't have a Section B for that first one, it's going to be a misdemeanor. So you have to do something in a Section B saying it's not a misdemeanor anymore. Section 5, the impoundment, Representative Seaton wanted something like this in, so this was his amendment when the bill passed the House 2 years ago. His point was, right now, you can't impound a car if somebody, you don't get automatic impoundment of a car if somebody's driving while intoxicated or under the influence. He wanted automatic impoundment, and then there's the last sentence that says if you show that it really was your car, you weren't the person driving, and somebody else took the car, and you were an innocent person whose car is being used, then you can get the car back by paying the fees of impoundment. Representative Seaton, and you can talk about that section. We didn't put it in. I don't even know that he feels that strongly about it. He might put it in on the House floor if he took it out here. It's not something that either of our offices have an opinion on. It was so really, Section 1, I agree, should be changed, and Section 5, we don't particularly care about. I don't know that Representative Seaton still cares about it. As a matter of good faith, he asked that it go in, and I said I didn't have an objection at that time, and I still don't either way.
If I may, Mr. Chair, as a matter of good faith, I would have liked to know that.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems pretty light, you know, when you read this. But there's a lot of big stuff right in there.
Sure.
And, you know, and the first thing that says, well, what else are we getting into here that we don't know about? And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong on that, but I've been doing this for a couple of years. It's kind of like when I ask you a question, you say, well, let's first talk about Section 1. And I don't like that. I can maybe see a Second Amendment when we get to that point.
I had a feeling on that. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. On that point, Mr. Chair, I remember that discussion, and I remember Representative Seaton's desire at that time was to not only take the driver off the road, but get the car off the road if somebody, you know, so that the consequences are even more pronounced. So that was his rationale, and I think he has a really strong feeling about getting rid of the cars that are used by people who drive while they're under the influence. So.
Representative Gatto.
Just a thought, rental cars, borrowed cars, I'm going to lend you my car, I'm going to get my car impounded, but you know, rental car agency, how are they liable? They're going to have to pay rental and towing fees, I mean, sorry, towing and impoundment fees.
Yeah, they'll have to pay it, and under this section, then they have to get the money back from the person who was driving, which is cumbersome.
Representative Gardner?
Actually, it was on that point. I believe when you rent a car, you sign an agreement that any cost, that anything that involves their loss of revenue, they'd charge to your card.
Goes on your Visa immediately?
Yeah, it goes on your Visa. They're not hurt.
Well, you guys are getting off light today. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I think I'll close it out to public testimony and bring it back to the committee. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I would like to offer an amendment that's different from my original version, and that would be on page 1, line 7, to change 300, delete that, and insert 25. So that somebody who fails to notify the state of their current residence address is subject to a fine not to exceed $25 for that offense.
I think I'll object because I think it takes all the teeth out of it, and I think we need to have it attract people's attention. Representative Ledoux.
Well, when you say it takes the teeth out of it, I mean, it can really only have teeth if people are aware of it. And I gather that right now it's actually a misdemeanor. You know, I think I changed my address a few years ago, and I had no idea that I was supposed to be telling the Department of Motor Vehicles about it. Can't imagine that. You know, if you went around and you took a survey of, well, maybe the people in this room now know, but if you just took a random survey in this building.
Yeah. it's on the back of your license.
Maybe it's on your back of your license. Right. But
you must notify the DMV,
print,
the name and address changed within 30 days.
Yeah. I haven't read the back of mine.
Well, you have a new license. I don't have one of those.
I don't either.
Mine's old.
Is there any further comments on amendment number one? Call for the vote, please.
Representative Gatto?
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Ledoux?
Yes.
Representative Ramos?
No.
Representative Boot?
Yes.
Representative Gardner?
Yes.
Representative Newman?
Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify, yes vote amends this to $25 fine. Pass.
Yes. Feel like the other Lone Ranger, no.
Yes.
It passes. I believe we have a second amendment.
I'm sorry, Representative Newman, was that a yes?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to propose an amendment to, and only for the, because I'd like further discussion on the issue. And I see the lady who represents Representative Rose is here said that we don't have an issue with this. So I think that the spot, the carrier of the bill doesn't oppose the amendment. Or she indicated the carrier for the carrier of the bill. But delete section 5 on this, just because I think it should be discussed further. And there's a lot of stuff in there that I don't understand. And I don't want to hold this bill up. But.
Is there any opposition to amendment number 2?
I object.
Me too.
Pistol?
Chair, Representative Newman, I understand with, and I'll speak for my boss here, we believe that most of it is a really good clause. The part about the other, you know, if it's another person's car or, you know what I mean, that's kind of where I do have a little bit of issue with. But it's, you know, will of the committee.
That's why I would like a committee discussion on that part. If we want to do that, let's do it through a committee process.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner.
I'd like to kind of address that just because I remember more and more now of that the discussion at the time. And the idea was if you're pulled over for drunk driving, Representative Seaton wanted the trooper or whoever to have the authority to impound your vehicle. However, if you didn't own the vehicle, then the question is, what happens? It's off the road now. So if you're the owner of a vehicle that has been impounded under those circumstances, and you can prove that you owned it and that you didn't get ownership the day after the event when the arrested person signed over title or something, so your ownership has to predate the offense, then you can get your car back.
Representative Ledoux.
Am I hearing correctly that the sponsor of the bill doesn't want Section 5 in there?
I believe they're ambivalent.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, as Representative Guerra had spoken previously, that was an amendment that Seaton had put in on the floor because this bill was actually part of House Bill 184 that passed the House. May of last year, and you know, this bill ended up being taken out on the Senate side, and it was
I remember that, but mm-hmm. I just guess I'm just sort of curious, if he's ambivalent about it, then why did he leave it in the bill when he introduced the bill?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, we introduced this bill along with the speaker on behalf of Representative Guerra. And so this was what was brought to us, and it was a promise that was made to carry this.
So this is a provision that Representative Guerra wants in this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I just felt honor-bound to leave the bill as Representative Seaton had amended it. I think he's not ambivalent. We're ambivalent.
Okay.
If I can make a suggestion, I'll be supporting the amendment, but on the basis that Representative Seaton, I mean, if it passes, that Representative Seaton get together with the sponsors of the bill and tweak it before it gets to the next committee sitting left of me.
Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw my objection to the amendment.
Are there any further objections to the amendment? And again, that's with the intent that all the concerned parties tweak it before it gets to judiciary. So amendment number two passes. With that, what are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, could I suggest a title amendment? It's awfully broad, and now it's been changed just to...
Oh, no, you can do that when you... Representative Ledoux.
Can I just say, let's move it down?
Can I have a...
Why don't we hear from Mr. Guerra first as to how he wants to amend the title?
Mandatory impoundment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. Two things have changed so that you don't need the title part that says an act relating to mandatory impoundments of vehicles used in certain offenses. The first word, mandatory, frankly freaked out the staff of Senator Stedman. He thought this bill was making doing something more on mandatory auto insurance. And this act relates to motor vehicle insurance, for sure. But I don't think you need that first mandatory word in. That's totally up to the committee. And I would narrow down the last sentence, and it says notices relating to motor vehicles and driver's licenses. I would just say notices relating to motor vehicles and notices relating to driver's licenses, so the bill doesn't Christmas tree. So the last one's the most important. Deleting that middle clause because the bill has changed, and that other mandatory just to make it.
Are you offering that amendment?
I'll offer that amendment.
Is there any opposition? Yeah. Amendment number three passes, conceptual amendment number three. What are the wishes of the committee?
I'll move the bill.
Can I have a bill number, please?
House bill number 33125 LS 0972/A with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note of zero. As amended.
Seeing no opposition, we will move it on to judiciary.
Thank you.
And with that, we're adjourned at 4:25.